actually have the Attorney General of the United States essentially shoot this case in the head was very surprising and I think even astonishing to most people who followed this.
The U.S. Justice Department throws out the Stevens case. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, the 1st of April. Good evening. I'm Ellen Lockyer. Also tonight, the nation's Supreme Court considers a Valdez tax.
It was a lively argument because it is such an unusual issue.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by the Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, operating and maintaining the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, and by Comfort Suites Anchorage International Airport. Comfort Suites, an all suites hotel, is now open with a 24-hour shuttle service, indoor pool, and high-speed internet access. Reservations at 243-8080.
Former Alaska Senator Ted Stevens may walk away from 7 felony convictions a free man with a clean record. The Justice Department wants his guilty verdict thrown out. It will not pursue a new trial and wants all charges dropped. The Office of Attorney General Eric Holder announced the decision this morning. APRN's Libby Casey reports from Washington.
Attorney General Eric Holder said in a statement that after careful review, he's concluded that certain information should have been provided to the defense for use at trial. Justice Department spokeswoman Laura Sweeney reads from Holder's announcement.
In light of this conclusion, and in consideration of the totality of the circumstances of this particular case, the Attorney General has determined that it is in the interest of justice to dismiss the indictment and not proceed with a new trial.
The Justice Department revealed Wednesday that notes from an interview with the government's star witness weren't turned over to the defense until last week. Judge Emmett Sullivan, who presided over the trial, has scheduled a hearing in Washington next Tuesday to address the government's motion. The judge is expected to drop all charges. Ted Stevens' lawyer says the former senator will appear in court next week. Attorney Brendan Sullivan spoke to reporters Wednesday for the first time since he took on the case.
We're very grateful to the Attorney General of the United States, Eric Holder, for the decision that he made today to drop all charges against Senator Stevens. That decision was justified by the extraordinary evidence of government corruption in this case. Senator Ted Stevens should never have been prosecuted. It was a bad judgment to have done so in the first place.
Sullivan's office released a written statement from Stevens Wednesday morning. In it, he said the cloud that's been surrounding him has been removed. Stevens called it unfortunate that his re-election bid last fall was affected by, quote, proceedings now recognized as unfair. The 85-year-old also thanked his family, friends, and colleagues in the Senate who stood by him and thanked Alaskans who've supported him. Stevens was convicted in October of lying on Senate financial forms about gifts worth more than $250,000. He was never sentenced. Instead, post-trial proceedings have been tied up with the fallout from accusations of government misconduct. An Anchorage-based FBI agent alleged soon after the trial that a fellow agent and prosecutors acted unethically. A government witness also said his testimony was influenced by prosecutors, although he changed his story about that claim multiple times. The Justice Department switched prosecutors in February after some of the team was held in contempt for failing to turn over documents to the defense. Stevens' lawyer, Brendan Sullivan, blasted the initial prosecutors.
The misconduct of the prosecutors was stunning to me. Many prosecutors were involved and at least one FBI agent. Not only did the government fail to provide evidence to the defense that the law requires them to provide, but they created false testimony that they gave us, and they actually presented false testimony in the courtroom.
Sullivan says when his firm received additional evidence from the Justice Department last week, he wasn't happy his hunches about missing information were correct.
In fact, we were sickened by it because it clearly told the story of government corruption as they were hell-bent on convicting a United States senator.
The Justice Department said the newly discovered prosecutor's notes would have been used at trial by Stevens' lawyers to cast doubt on government star witness Bill Allen. The Justice Department's Office of Professional Responsibility is investigating. Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski calls the news bittersweet. She says while she's pleased for Stevens and his family, she's disturbed by what happened.
I was very, very angry this morning when I first heard the news. I thought, what kind of a country is this? What kind of a justice system is this that would do this to a man and then just say, never mind?
Murkowski says no current effort by the Justice Department can erase history.
Think of the expense to which it came. He has been literally dragged through the mud, his reputation just blasted, his career gone, an election lost.
In a statement, Alaska Congressman Don Young said justice has finally been served, and Governor Sarah Palin said Stevens has endured a horrible thing and blatant attempts by adversaries to destroy his reputation, career, and finances. Stevens' replacement in the U.S. Senate, Mark Begich, put out a statement saying the Justice Department's decision to end the prosecution is reasonable. Begich has long said Stevens should not serve jail time and said he hopes Stevens, his family, and Alaskans can move on and put this behind them. The Attorney General's decision to drop the case does not make claims about Stevens' innocence. But Stevens' lawyer, Brendan Sullivan, paused as he left Wednesday's press conference and made a final comment to a CNN reporter.
His name is clear. He is innocent of the charges as if they've never been brought. Thank you.
In Washington, I'm Libby Casey.
Friends of Senator Stevens say he's traveling in Alaska right now, but his Girdwood home that was at the center of the federal case against him was dark today. A few miles down the road at the base of Alyeska Ski Resort, longtime Girdwood residents gathered at the bake shop to reflect on the news. Rick Petrie has lived in town for several decades and says he knows the senator personally. He was ecstatic to hear the Justice Department was dropping the case, but he says the former senator was taken for a big ride that should never have happened.
Well, me as an older individual now in my 60s, I'm very disappointed. I was hoping for more of what Stevens has given us over all the years. And, we need more representation like him, and we don't have it now, period. We're losing. We've lost. We've lost out.
A few tables away, Girdwood resident Kate Sandberg was just finishing her lunch. She says she's not a huge fan of Stevens, but she feels sorry for all he has had to go through. She says Alaskans have also lost out, given how poorly the case was handled.
I do not feel like justice has been served. I think that the prosecution did a very poor job, and it's a shame because he will always have this over his head. And we will never really have a resolution.
In Juneau, several people reflected on Stevens's long record of service to the state. Bob Hansen voted for him last fall, despite his federal conviction, days before the election. Hansen was happy to hear the news today.
He's old enough that I'm actually glad that they let it go. What are you going to do with an 85-year-old man? I mean, you know. So I wish him well.
Many Alaskans were surprised by the announcement, including attorney and blogger Cliff Groh. Groh has been following the Stevens case and the broader corruption investigation in Alaska closely for a book he's working on. He spent the morning writing a new entry on his website.
I started my blog post with the words, it's no joke.
Groh says he had a hard time initially believing it was true.
I do not think that most people who follow this trial expected this. There were some people who followed this trial that thought that the judge might throw it out. But to actually have the prosecution itself pull the plug and have the Attorney General of the United States essentially shoot this case in the head was very surprising and I think even astonishing to most people who followed this.
Groh says the news today throws into question the continuing Justice Department investigation into corruption in Alaska.
Other people who have been widely reported have been targets of investigation, people like Ben Stevens and Don Young, might sleep a little bit more soundly tonight because I do think that this will slow down the prosecution's investigations. I want to stress that neither of those gentlemen have been charged, and they both deny wrongdoing.
Groh says prosecutors are generally held to a higher standard than are other attorneys in the criminal justice system. still to come on Alaska News Nightly. The state Senate passes its version of the budget.
Even during these tight times, we need to present this increase for educating the citizens of Alaska.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The Alaska Public Radio Network builds bridges of communication between urban and rural Alaska. APRN covering the stories that impact the lives of all Alaskans.
Members of the state Senate rejected Governor Sarah Palin's choice to take the place of Juneau's Kim Elton. She has selected Tim Grusendorf, a legislative staff member and a former Democratic candidate for the District 4 House seat. Senate Majority Leader Johnny Ellis said after a lengthy meeting of the caucus that, quote, there was not adequate support in the caucus to seat Mr. Grusendorf. He refused to disclose the vote count. Ellis was asked the reason for the rejection.
There's a strong desire among folks for the folks in Juneau and Governor Palin, a respectful request to them to work together to find someone that is a selection of the or a nomination on the list from the local folks to the governor. We are respectfully requesting the Juneau Democrats and Governor Palin to work together to find a nominee to fill this seat.
Ellis said the Democrats gave the results of their meeting to Senate President Gary Stevens, who notified the governor. The governor now has 10 days to make another appointment. Juneau Democrats had recommended Representative Beth Kertula for the position. Ellis was asked if the Senate Democrats would approve anyone except Kertula.
Individuals can speak for themselves, but I sensed a strong desire to respectfully encourage the Juneau Democrats and the governor to work together to find a person to fill this seat. People are all over the map with different opinions about how that would proceed, but the Juneau Democrats can offer up names. The governor has interviewed folks, and hopefully there will be a mutually respectful process to come up with a new name.
The governor now has 10 days to make another appointment. Governor Palin yesterday met with what was required of her to set aside federal economic stimulus money for the state's use. She wrote President Barack Obama that she will accept the money that will create new private sector jobs and grow the economy. Palin's letter does not mention a dollar amount and leaves the specifics open for debate by the legislature. The Senate, just to make sure that her letter covered all the necessary programmatic changes, passed a resolution the House dealt with last week, assuring the federal government that the state wants an option to accept all the money to which it is entitled. Finance co-chair Bert Stedman said the resolution leaves no doubt the state is considering everything available.
The governor, in her letter, said Alaskans reserve the right to later decline certain funds to be determined in the budget process. This legislative resolution is intended to do two things: to make clear to the federal government that Alaska wants to retain the right to participate in the stimulus funding provisions, even if the governor should later decline to accept funding. To make clear to the governor that the legislature is doing its job in reviewing the details, financial and otherwise, of the federal funding. And at this point, the legislature wants to ensure that we do not lose out on the ability to receive federal funds that could help educate our children, make our homes more energy efficient, help train our workers, or anything else.
A new version of a Southeast lawmaker's bill to change the initiative process will make it harder for groups to get measures on the ballot. That's drawing opposition from some of those groups. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Alaska allows a wide range of laws to be put before voters through the initiative process. Campaign finance reform, medical marijuana, cruise ship taxes, and aerial wolf hunting are but a few of the issues that have made the ballot in recent years. Ketchikan Republican Representative Kyle Johansson says current law makes the process too easy, so he's pushing for changes. He wants public hearings in 30 of the state's 40 House districts as part of the signature-gathering process. Such hearings are not required under current law. Johansson says the hearings would have to be properly publicized according to rules of Alaska's Open Meetings Act.
So if you didn't do the outreach and the information to the voters, that would be viewed as not meeting the requirements to get it on the ballot. So it just would disqualify the question. if the outreach isn't done.
An earlier version of his legislation required the hearings, but had no penalties if they were not held. The Alaska Public Interest Research Group supported an initiative reform bill Johansson introduced last year, but the group, which has been part of several initiative campaigns, opposes the new measure. Executive Director Gavis Sevis says the hearings provision would hinder citizen lawmaking.
Instead of fixing very particular problems, it seems like the intent of the bill is to make it impossible or nearly impossible for people to use the initiative process as a way to get their issue onto the ballot.
Johansson's legislation is scheduled to get its first hearing next week. Sevis says ACPIRG is one of several groups organizing against the measure. Johansson has criticized the initiative process and particular ballot measures, such as 2006's cruise ship initiative. In addition to the hearings provision, his bill would require backers to release more information earlier in the signature-gathering process.
We want to get disclosure of money spent as far close to the start of the process as possible. So as soon as money starts being spent, we want to know about it.
Johansson's bill includes a 2-year prohibition on initiatives substantially similar to those that failed in a previous election. It also would eliminate payment of a per-signature commission to hired gatherers circulating petitions. ACPIRG supports additional financial disclosure, but Aceves says other parts of the bill set up too many barriers for citizens' groups trying to get measures on the ballot.
The idea that a initiative that goes on the ballot isn't a public process is sort of a reach, because the whole idea of the initiative process is that you have to take your issue to the people. You have to travel around and gather signatures. Then once it's on the ballot, there's no better public opinion poll than people taking a vote on the issue.
ACPIRG worked on the 2008 Clean Elections Initiative. It also was part of earlier measures calling for campaign finance reform and special elections to replace U.S. senators. This year's regular legislative meetings wrap up in less than 3 weeks. Johansson, who serves as House Majority Leader, says he hopes to get the bill through his chamber before adjournment, but he recognizes that lawmakers have a lot of issues on the table this year. This is Ed Schoenfeld reporting from Juneau.
The state's Senate today passed and sent back to the House its version of next year's operating budget. The Senate budget spends $7.9 billion in state money, about the same amount the House approved less than 3 weeks ago. Finance co-chair Lyman Hoffman described the spending plan as a status quo, hold the line budget. He said it would spend a little less money than the governor has requested and will not expand the number of state employees as much as the governor has proposed. On the other side, Lyman Hoffman said the budget increases spending on education programs such as Head Start, area cost differentials, and for schools that are not performing up to standards.
This brings the total increase to the education budget to just under $50 million. Again, I believe that this is a high priority of our caucus, and that is why we feel that even during these tight times that we need to present this increase for educating the citizens of Alaska.
Hoffman also pointed to increases in money to hire troopers and village public safety officers, money for new domestic violence shelters, and a $25 million increase over last year's budget for the university. He said the bill garnered comment from more than 400 people in 26 communities across the state, and he was surprised with the results.
For the first time, I think, Mr. President, we've received, in the many years that I've served on the Finance Committee, received many calls of not saying what should be added or what should be deleted, but many thank yous. Of the 400, we received over 150 people testifying, saying that they thanked us for what we had included in the budget.
The budget sets aside education money for next year's budget. However, Minority Leader Jean Terriaro questioned the wisdom of that, as well as whether the level of spending voted on today puts too much of a strain on the financial reserves that will be essential in coming years. Finance co-chair Bert Stedman says the state's savings have increased and there's no concern over meeting future needs.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The University of Alaska Fairbanks now offers both a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts degree in fisheries. A fisheries degree prepares you for a career in fisheries biology, management, business or policy, and more. Learn more at www.uaf.edu/fish. The UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, educating fisheries and marine science experts in Alaska for Alaska. This message sponsored by the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences.
The U.S. Supreme Court heard oral arguments this morning in a Valdez tax case. The question is whether the city of Valdez can tax tanker vessels that come into its port. The city started taxing tankers in 2000 and expects to collect about $8 million from the tax this year. That's about a fifth of the city's overall budget. But one shipper, Polar Tankers Incorporated, and its parent company, ConocoPhillips, claims the tax is illegal and violates the United States Constitution. The tonnage clause forbids cities or ports from taxing vessels. However, the city of Valdez says the tax is not a tax on tonnage, weight, or goods. Instead, city officials call it a property tax. Attorney Ted Olson argued the case for Valdez. Olson was Solicitor General under former President George W. Bush and has argued scores of cases before the Supreme Court.
The framers of the Constitution would not have wanted ports to impose a tax just on vessels coming and going. What our argument was that this is a tax on property. It happens to be a vessel, but Valdez and Alaska taxes all kinds of property, and it's entirely appropriate. That's how cities and states earn the revenue that they can to support their facilities.
Olson says the vessels benefit from services the city of Valdez provides when they're docked in port and are only paying their fair share. But Polar Tankers special counsel Charles Rothfeld argued today that the tax on tankers is too specific to be a property tax. It applies to vessels over 95 feet long and excludes commercial fishing boats. He says since the tax is only on vessels, it's exactly what the Constitution's framers had in mind. Rothfeld also argues that the tax is not properly levied because it is based on how much time a ship spends in the Valdez port.
Because the vessels that are subject to tax spend only a small part of the year in Valdez, and they go to other places where they might be subject to tax, and Valdez can only claim a percentage of the time that they're there, the property tax has to be apportioned between all jurisdictions. And we say that the Valdez formula is one that's calculated to tax too much of the value of the property.
Rothfeld is also experienced in matters before the nation's highest court and specializes in Supreme Court litigation. He says despite what seems like an esoteric issue, the justices were engaged. The court will deliver their decision this spring or summer. The Alaska Supreme Court sided with the city of Valdez. Polar Tankers has been paying the tax, but under protest. Sport anglers who wade through southeast Alaska's creeks and rivers may have to get some new fishing gear in the next couple of years. That follows a decision by the State Board of Fisheries at its February meeting in Sitka. The board voted to prohibit the use of felt sole waders starting in 2011. It's a move designed to limit the spread of non-native plants and animals, and it may be among the first such bans in the nation. KFSK's Joe Vicnicki reports.
Wading across the jagged rocks of a chest-high, swollen creek in springtime in search of the next fishing hole is a challenge. Some anglers use waders with a half-inch thick layer of felt on the bottom that helps with the traction on the slimy rocks of a creek bed. That layer of felt can also be a good transmitter of some unwanted plants and animals. It's a problem that led Juneau fly fisherman Mark Vinsel to propose the region-wide ban at February's meeting.
I caught my first whirling disease-infected trout in the Truckee River about 1981, California, and it so repulsed me that I never fished there again, even though I went past there probably at least 100 times on fishing trips to other places over the next years.
Vinsel, a former president of the Juneau Recreational Club Rain Country Fly Fishers, says he does not want someone bringing in an outside threat like the parasite that causes whirling disease. That's a disorder that can deform trout and salmon and decimate fish numbers. It has yet to show up in Alaska, except for some evidence of it found in the rainbow trout of an Anchorage hatchery in 2007. Vinsel also cited the spread of an algae called didymo, or rock snot, that can crowd out other native aquatic life. Other outside threats are New Zealand mud snails and zebra mussels, creatures that have caused problems in other U.S. waterways, including some of the most popular trout streams.
I have grave fears. The value of our fisheries are far more valuable than any of these places that have suffered severe damage from these nuisance species.
Vinsel wanted the felt sole prohibition to be a proactive step for halting the spread of unwanted plant and animal life in Alaska. He says many states are already putting out information about the dangers of transporting plants and animals on fishing gear and educating anglers about cleaning off waders. The nationwide fish conservation group Trout Unlimited last fall asked companies that make waders to end the production of felt soles by 2011, and New Zealand last year banned the use of felt soles. However, Southeast Alaska's prohibition may be the first of its kind for the U.S. The Department of Fish and Game was neutral on Vinsel's proposal at February's meeting, although it agrees the ban will reduce the spread of unwanted species. Richard Chapel is with Fish and Game's Sport Fish Division in Haines. He says Fish and Game wants to be proactive about stopping the spread of unwanted organisms. However, Chapel says felt soles are just one way to spread the problem.
We believe that there should be a comprehensive program that all vectors for transmitting invasive organisms and harmful diseases in water should be addressed, you know, such as educating people on how to disinfect their boats and trailers and animals that may walk in and out of the water.
One of the threats cited by Vinsel has been documented in some southeast freshwater systems. Chapel says the algae didymo has been observed in several sites in Juneau, as well as a spot in Haines and one in Sitka. He says the algae is not considered an invasive species. He says it is endemic to south central waters and may be in its home range here in southeast.
Here at the high latitudes and low nutrient levels in the streams in southeast Alaska, it does not seem to have taken off and become a problem in most streams.
Chapel says Fish and Game is still figuring out the implications of the proposal that passed in February.
We have a couple of years before it takes effect, and I think the department will be discussing with other state agencies and federal agencies to come up with a comprehensive program for dealing with harmful aquatic organisms.
Some anglers have questioned whether non-felt waders can provide the same traction as felt soles, and some at February's Board of Fish meeting also raised the concern of the cost for anglers to buy new gear. The board voted 4-3 for the felt sole prohibition. It takes effect for sport anglers in 2011. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicnicki.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at aprn.org. We had reports tonight from Rosemarie Alexander and Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau and Joe Vicnicki in Petersburg. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., and Dave Donaldson from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our engineers, our audio engineers, are Gooseberry Peter and Dave Waldron. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A.
The Alaska Public Radio Network promotes Alaska's cultures, regions, and ethnic diversity, including a commitment to informing and empowering Alaska's Native peoples.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.